On episode 473 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Dr. Ian K. Smith and discuss his book, Mind Over Weight, Curb Your Cravings, Find Motivation, and Hit Your Number in 7 Simple Steps. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/473.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Raz, how are you doing?
Great, Alan. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. You know, we record some of these intros. We record them a couple of weeks before. So I can say as of February 1st, the gym is open.
Yay.
So I am running the gym now. I've got employees that, you know, they're coming in and basically doing the heavy lifting. I'm here for moral support and just to make sure that we comply with Mensa requirements. That's Mensa's our health department. So
okay.
Just making sure that we're doing everything the right way. I've got my little video monitors up here on the wall. So I'm sitting here doing my work and I look over, I'm like, okay, they're a little too close. I've got to tell my staff to not let that happen again. But
excellent. Very good.
Right now, everything's good. And a lot of people are excited about the gym opening. I am too. So good times for me.
That's
how are
great.
Things up there in the frozen tundra of Michigan?
Yeah, still chilly and snowy, but things are good. And similarly, Mike has to start traveling again for his work. So that's good for him that he can move around a little bit. I think he was getting a little bit of cabin fever. But the bad news is that means I have to start cooking again. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Well, you could do what I did for lunch today. I mean, I basically have food here at the gym because this I wanted to be here the whole shift and I had some things to do during the middle of the shift. So I boiled a dozen eggs and bought 3 cans of tuna and that's my meals. So, you know, not flashy, but it gets the job done and I can do that for here and there. And it's not like I'm really missing out on. I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything, just keeping it simple.
That's good.
Just makes it easy.
I printed out some new recipes that I would like to try. And so I've got my meals lined up for the week for dinners anyway. It's just going to be me. The kids are back to school.
You could tell Mike he needs to spend his Saturday bulk cooking for the family.
Yes. That would be awesome.
You put them in single family serving things. You put them in the freezer. You put them in the fridge. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you could.
I could. But in order to get back at it, I do need to start cooking again too. I used to cook. I haven't in a long time and I can get back into it and make some healthy meals for myself.
Okay. Well, if you need some new recipes, that's kind of one of the things I've been doing for my online clients. They wanted recipes. They're like,
awesome.
You know, if we're going to eat, I want to eat well. And
yes.
So, yeah, part of what I do now for my clients online for my 12-week program is I literally about 3 times a week, give them a recipe that I really enjoy.
Awesome.
And so it's a good mix of dinners, lunches, breakfast, snacks, things like that. So I'm kind of building, for lack of a better word, a recipe pack. They're not my recipes. I'm borrowing them from online, but I'm just sharing links and PDF printouts. So it goes back to the source. But yeah, there's a lot out there, but I'll share some of my favorites with you.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
Cool. So let's go ahead and talk to Dr. Smith. Our guest today is the number one New York Times bestselling author of Clean and Lean, The Clean 20, Shred, Super Shred, The Shred Power Cleanse, and Blast the Sugar Out. He has created 2 national health initiatives, the 50 Million Pound Challenge and the Makeover Mile, and has served 2 terms on the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition. A graduate of Harvard, Columbia, and the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine, he is an avid fitness enthusiast and sportsman, and somehow he also finds time to write some great mystery novels. With no further ado, here's Dr. Ian K. Smith. Dr. Smith, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
So the book is Mind Over Weight, Curb Cravings, Find Motivation, and Hit Your Number in 7 Simple Steps. And what I like about this book is that it actually gets in front of this, because most people will start with the action plans, the movement, the what they're eating. They start throwing things against the wall, and then they get frustrated when, you know, a month down the line, they're not where they thought they would be. And usually that comes down to mindset. If you really got down to it, it's the mind that's going to make this happen. We've got to get the right mindset. We've got to get our brain set first and then act. So it's sort of the, you know, ready, shoot, aim is what most of us do. And it doesn't work very well when you're talking about weight loss.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. People's natural tendency is to want to start with the plan, with the trainer, with the gym membership, with the workouts. And really it all starts above the neck. I mean, you know, the starting point, the ground zero for weight loss and for many things in life in general is really about getting your mind in the right place. And one of the best things that I think about this book is how small it is. You know, it's 7 small chapters. The size is physically small and the read is very quick. However, the information is very dense. So this to me is kind of how I wrote the book in the way I would like to receive information about a specific topic. And this book is all about the mental aspect of weight loss or weight management. I think that a lot of people have been effective and are effective at losing weight and maintaining weight, but they would be a lot more effective if they had sharpened their mental acuity as it relates to weight loss and having a better understanding of what I call the weight loss landscape. Because it's not always just about what am I going to eat, what exercise do I need to do, and what results do I see on the scale. It's about where everything fits in your life, and it's about your environment. And that's why I say, you know, I believe people should take a landscape view rather than just a portrait view. You think about when you print out in landscape versus portrait. So with Mind Over Weight, the idea is that let's talk about the things that have nothing to do with food and exercise first. And one of those things, of course, is trying to unlock your motivation and all of us have motivation somewhere. The question is, can we access it? And everyone can't necessarily access their motivation. So I start with chapter 1 right away, which is basically, you know, let's unlock your motivation and understand what it is, where it comes from, and how you have to own it. I think that's very important.
Yeah. And as you said in the book, there was a statistic you shared that said by today, which, you know, this goes live, it's February 15th, 80% of the people who had a New Year's resolution for weight loss have already fallen off. And they're not going to accomplish that weight loss goal, at least not based on this set of resolutions that they made. But there are ways that we can stay motivated. And in the book, you talk about several ways for us to do that. Can you go through a few of those and let us know why those are important to stay motivated?
Well, you know, we look at motivators. So you break motivation down into what actually motivates you. And the idea behind motivation basically is something that drives you to want to do something, to complete, to begin and complete an action, to pursue a goal, to complete a task. And so when you look at different types of motivation, there's two basic types. There's internal or intrinsic motivation, and there's external or extrinsic motivation. So you have internal motivators and you have external motivators. And that breaks down basically with an internal motivator is you are doing something or you're motivated to do something because you are happy or excited or desirous of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish for internal reasons, for the reason of doing it itself. So, you know, you read about maps and study maps because you love the study of geography and you love understanding the relationships between countries and bodies of water. So you're not doing it to pass a test. You're doing it because you want that information, that knowledge excites you, the process excites you. Whereas someone who is studying a particular topic simply because they want to do well on a test or an exam, they are externally motivated because they want to get the results on the exam. Someone who wants to lose weight because they want to look good in a bikini and they on, you know, on an island on vacation, and they want people to acknowledge that they look good and say nice things to them, that is external motivation. Whereas an internal motivator in that case would be, I want to lose weight because I want to make sure that I feel good, that I don't feel winded walking up steps, that I want to be happy and live a long life without being ravaged by disease. That's more of an internal motivator rather than having an external kind of validation. So in the book, I go through different types of internal and extrinsic motivators. I talk about extrinsic, like fame, praise, grades, money, awards, social acceptance. Those things typically tend to be extrinsic motivators. Intrinsic motivators, fun, pleasure, gratifications, gratification, feeling of worthiness, of accomplishment, a sense of purpose. And, you know, so it's not that extrinsic motivators are better than internal or vice versa. It's the combination of the two that's important. Having both of them, they work in a complementary fashion. For example, I just had a boiler replaced in my house. I have two boilers in my house. And the technician was explaining to me how it works. It's a two-stage system. The first boiler, which is stage one, tries to heat the house. And if it's too cold outside and the boiler can't keep the house warm enough because the temperatures outside are so cold, it's not being able to do the job by itself, the second boiler will kick in. That's the stage two. That's the second stage. And so then the second boiler kicks in, and together they're able to keep the house warm against the chill outside. Same thing with motivation. If your internal motivator is not really able to keep the fire lit under you and keep you going, then that external motivator can kick in, and together they can keep you motivated and on the path of what you're trying to accomplish. And that is why you need both internal and external motivators.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, if you go in this with just I'm going to hire a trainer and go, and you don't really have a plan, and you just sort of say, okay, I think this is what I want as far as the end game. But you don't have things that are going to make you feel good while you're doing it. So there's little, you know, achievable little milestones as you go to say, okay, you know, being happy when you lose 2 pounds, you know, even though you want to lose 20, you know, that's that start. That's that thing that's going inside you feel good about. But then also having friends that you're working out with or a trainer or something like that, that you now, okay, I have to show up because they're at the gym waiting for me, or they're at the track waiting for me. Those are the internal and then the external versions that are going to keep you motivated because you have both.
Yes, 100%. And I want to switch to goal setting because that's also part of, you know, proper goal setting. I think that another area where people could improve on and could be very helpful if they get it right is how to set goals. And people don't talk about proper goal setting. And goals are very, very important. And how you set the goals is extremely important. A lot of people, unfortunately, will set unrealistic goals. And because the goals are unrealistic and they're unable to reach those goals, they actually think that they are failing, when in reality, they are succeeding. But they'll throw away whatever plan they're on, or they'll totally give up because in their mind, the way they framed their goals, it's a failure. But it's really, had the goal been more proper and more appropriate, they would actually realize that they're actually succeeding. And so setting the right goals is extremely important before you begin any weight loss journey.
Yeah. And, you know, I having come from business, we set goals all the time in business. And so I was very familiar with SMART goals. And I've even talked about that a couple times on the podcast. But you have a different twist in the book. You call them very SMART goals. So this is a longer acronym. I'll take off the back end. The SMART is specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound or time restricted. The very, though, is the part of that acronym that I was not familiar with before I read your book. Could you take a few minutes to go through that?
Sure. You probably weren't familiar with it because I created it.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's why I had never heard of it.
I created it. I didn't. It's not somewhere else. At least I've never seen it before. But and it's not that it's ingenious or anything. It's just, you know, you realize. So very, V-E-R-Y, of the very smart as far as setting goals. V is for varied. You know, what people have to understand is that they have to make sure that your goals, when it comes to weight loss, are not just focused on one aspect of it. Just don't focus on the scale. Have a goal that talks about, you know, physical. How far can you walk, you know, in a certain period of time? What size clothes can you fit? Have a goal. I want to get from a size 10 to a size 8. So when you make your goals, just don't make them homogenous. Make them varied, you know, different aspects of weight loss or that are symbolic of weight loss. The E is effective. You know, there's no point in setting goals if what you are reaching does not provide some type of purposeful and meaningful change. And so, you know, if someone who weighs 300 pounds says that my ultimate goal is to lose 10 pounds, I'll be happy with that. That's it. Well, it's great that you set a goal. It's great when you hit your goal. But a 300-pound person who just loses 10 pounds, that is not going to be a meaningful change for that person as far as how they look or what their disease risk profile is. So that's not an effective goal. So that's the E for effective, for varied. The next one is R. And R is being responsible. You know, make goals that will challenge you, that will make you stretch, but make goals that are responsible goals. Don't have a goal where you want to lose 30 pounds in 30 days and you only weigh 150 pounds and you're 5'4". And in order to hit that goal, you have to do something very extreme and potentially unsafe to try to hit that goal. That's an irresponsible goal. So make sure that your goals are responsible. And lastly, the why is yours. People have to set goals that they own, not what others say you should do, not what others expect you to do. You have to own that goal. You have to believe in the goal. You have to trust in the goal, and you have to want the goal. So the goal must be yours.
Yeah. And I like that. I like that a lot. You know, one of the things I would propose is, you know, if one of the reasons that you're wanting to lose the weight is that you went to your doctor and your blood sugar is too high and he's about to start putting you on medication or worse yet, maybe some insulin, and you really don't want to go down that rabbit hole because a lot of people don't come out the other end the right way, then having a varied goal. So it's like, yes, I want to lose 40 pounds and I want to lower my blood sugar by, you know, 3 points, you know, take my A1C from a 10 to an 8, you know, in that same period of time. You'll still be diabetic, but you're moving in the right direction. And it's another goal that maybe you didn't lose 5 pounds this week, or maybe you didn't lose any weight this week, but because of the efforts you did, your blood sugar is coming down, and that's a win. And I think we don't give ourselves those opportunities to have wins. We focus on one number. And that makes it quite difficult. So Dr. Smith, now, one of the areas I think that's really, really difficult for people is that they feel hungry. And for many people, they believe they're hungry all the time. And it's not a true hunger. What they're actually doing is they're craving. You know, they want those Doritos, they want the salty, they want that chocolate, or they want that donut, or they're driving by a McDonald's and, you know, they smell what they smell and they're like, oh, I'm going to go get in that drive-in line and pick something up. Those are cravings. They're different from hunger. Can you explain the difference and then what a good strategy is for us to beat cravings?
So let me put it to you in two different ways. Hunger is your body saying it needs nourishment. It's not specific. It needs food. It needs energy. I'm hungry. A craving is specific. A craving says that I want a double layered chocolate cake. I want a piece of fried dough with powdered sugar on top. That's a craving. And it's very important to distinguish between the two. Cravings are generated through the reward pleasure system, the loop in our front brain. And it's all about dopamine. You know, when we enjoy something, our body releases this chemical, neurotransmitter called dopamine. And dopamine travels forward into the brain and it lets us know this was a satisfying experience. And it creates a memory. When I bit into that chocolate cake and released all of that dopamine, it created a memory in my system that I really enjoyed it. And if I do it again, I'm probably going to enjoy it again. And what happens with a craving is, once you've set this pathway up, whenever you see or hear about or smell, however you're triggered by that chocolate cake again, your body releases that dopamine. And that dopamine then becomes a seeking behavior. So you now want to seek that particular thing that made you feel really happy and really good and satiated you. You want to seek that. And so it drives you to get it. It's, you know, it's like drug addiction. It's a similar concept of drug addiction. If, you know, doing a particular drug gives you a certain feeling of satisfaction. And when you are around that drug again, or you think about that drug, then you now have this chemical urge to want to participate in the indulgence or the use of that particular drug. That's what cravings are. Cravings, however, unlike hunger, are short-termed and they can go away. So if you can outlast your craving, and everyone can't do it, but one thing to do is to distract yourself while you have a craving, because you can outlast it. And most research shows about 15 to 20 minutes, a craving will typically go away. It doesn't mean it won't come back, but it will typically go away. And so if for 15 to 20 minutes, you can do something that takes your mind off the craving or remove yourself from the environmental stimulus that's creating the craving, then you may be able to succeed. Look at it this way. When you get into the car, let's say your oil is low in your car and the light comes on in your car. When that oil light comes on, that is your car saying, I need oil. And no matter what you do, no matter how many times you turn that car on or off, that oil light is going to come back on and stay on until you put oil in the car and the car is fed. That's hunger. A craving is when you get into the car and the car says to you, it prompts you on your dashboard and says, do you want to connect your phone to Bluetooth? And if you don't push a yes or no, let's say you do nothing to it, you just let it sit there and you keep driving, eventually that prompt goes away. It goes away. It no longer stays there anymore because you didn't respond in a certain period of time. That's what a craving is.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that you want to do is you want to look at what are those triggers for why you're doing the things you're doing. Some of them will be really, really clear. Like if you're going to the state fair and, you know, you're going to smell that fried dough with the powdered sugar, you know where that booth is or where all those booths are because you smell it every time you go by them. You're going to have that constant trigger. You know, you just are. Now, I'm not saying don't go to the fair, but recognize what that is for what it is. Go get in a line and get on a ride. Go lose your money trying to knock the pins off of the table or whatever you're going to do, but try to do some things to distract yourself because you know those triggers are there. If it's something like a McDonald's, then it's more of a, I need to find a different route to work so I don't drive by that McDonald's every afternoon on my way home. Because I know if it's a nice day and I've got my windows rolled down, I'm going to smell that when I pull up to that intersection because I always catch that light. I don't want to make that right turn.
In the book, I give you several other kind of strategies: eating more protein, reducing stress, how to increase your hydration. You know, I won't delve into it. It's in the book, but there are other strategies other than outlasting. Some people say I can't outlast a craving. Well, I give you some other strategies that can actually help you in the book.
Yes, you do. Now, the last thing I want to get into, is food addiction. You know, I'm not a doctor. You are. So when we get to the point where I have a client that, you know, I believe has food addiction, you know, that's beyond the scope of my practice for sure. But how can someone recognize when this is not just a small problem with overeating, but is an actual addiction? How would they know? What are the symptoms? And then if they're going to look for a solution, what are the things they should be looking for in that solution to know that they're not just hiring a quack?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, food addiction and emotional eating really sometimes overlap. And emotional eating basically is you're eating food not for sustenance, not because you need the nourishment, but you're eating a particular food stuff because you want to address some type of emotional concern or emotional feelings you have. You're angry, you're happy, you're sad, whatever it is. But people who are addicted to food, here's some common ways to tell. And it's not always black and white, by the way. It can be very complex to be able to ascertain or discern one's addiction. But if you're someone, for example, who simply can't stop yourself from eating when you know that you're already full. I mean, you know that you're full. You're not really hungry, but there's more food left on the stove and you still have to go eat it. You know you're satiated, but you still have to go eat it. Another sign of addiction is when you find yourself constantly wanting to center your activities around food. You know, you want to meet up with a friend, you want to do it at a restaurant. You want to celebrate, you do it with food. When food is such a constant in your life and most of your activities or a large number of your activities are centered around food, then it is likely you may have an addiction to food. Also, you know, people who are addicted to food, they may have a particular food addiction. Like I worked with someone on Celebrity Fit Club when we were doing the show, and one of the singers had an addiction to pizza and she just couldn't stop. Once she ate one slice of pizza, she had to have four, five or six. She really just couldn't stop. And just like, you know, alcoholism and the addiction to alcohol, you know, an alcoholic, for example, can stay away from alcohol for years. And the minute they have that first drink, they can't stop and cut themselves off at that one drink. They got to have more. And similar properties occur with people who are addicted to food.
Yeah. You know, again, it's sad that this is a thing because, you know, like you said, with alcohol, it's pretty simple to say, I'm not going to go places where there's alcohol and I'm not going to take that first drink. But food, we can't necessarily always avoid food. We got to try to find those triggers. And if you have a food that's making you, and you said this in the book, making you feel guilty, you really need to explore that because that's a sign that something's going on. If you're hiding your food, if you're guilty about what you're doing, that's a big red flag that something's going on.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So Dr. Smith, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
I think the first strategy for me, and everyone obviously has three different things probably, but for me, it's identifying passion. I think it's important for people in life to really identify something that really revs their engine and that they're passionate about. And it could be all kinds of things. It could be music, it could be art, it could be writing, it could be food preparation, whatever it is, identify what you're passionate about and really work and curate an environment where you can pursue your passion. I think that's extremely important. It gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you a sense of being it being meaningful. The second thing is the physicality of life. Human beings are meant to be physical. And when we are not physical, then our engine, our body breaks down. I'll never forget a mechanic once told me, he said, a Porsche and other sports cars are damaged when they sit in the garage and are not driven. And I thought, no, you're preserving it. He said, absolutely not. He said, when you don't drive a sports car, the way sports cars are built, then you end up causing the sports car to deteriorate. The gaskets dry out, the seals start to leak, all these different mechanical things start happening because the car is not being driven like it's supposed to be and supposed to be used. So I think being physical, and that's a broad array of activities depending on who you are, but being physical in some type of regular, consistent manner is extremely important. The third thing I would say is stress. There is a mountain of research that talks about the impact, both physical and psychological, that stress can play in our lives. It can affect our immune system. It can affect our cardiovascular system. And obviously, it can affect us from a psychological standpoint. And I think people need to take more time to really absorb life and where they are and to enjoy the moment and to prioritize their life so that they are not allowing themselves to be stressed by things that at the end of the day really aren't that important. I think that's what the pandemic hopefully has taught a lot of people, that things that you thought were so important before, now that you've been forced to do without and to realign, you realize not so bad after all. I actually didn't need, you know, that $1,000, you know, handbag or those $300 pair of sneakers. I didn't really need that stuff. Like, I was okay without it and I survived and I lived and I wasn't even thinking about those things. So I think that, you know, people reducing their stress and being able to streamline their lives and increasing the presence of things that they find or that are more valuable to their existence, I think is important to overall wellness.
Dr. Smith, if someone wanted to learn more about you and the book Mind Over Weight, where would you like for me to send them?
My Instagram is at Dr. Ian Smith. Spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith. My Twitter is Dr. Ian Smith. And my website, DrIanSmith.com. Spell it all out.
Perfect. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/473, and I'll be sure to have the links there. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
It was very nice talking to you, and I hope you have a great 2021, all of us.
You too. Welcome back, Rachel.
Hey, Alan. What another great interview.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of myself to get through that entire interview and Dr. Smith, and not just breaking out laughing because of Lost in Space. But
oh, for sure.
He looks nothing like the Dr. Smiths that were in the TV show or the movie. It was just Dr. Smith. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, but cool.
The interview was great. You know, as a new personal trainer and just somebody who loves fitness in general, when it comes to losing weight, I always gravitate to movement. I always think getting up and moving is a great way to burn off some calories. And in talking with you and listening to your podcast, you take more of a stance with food. You know, the kitchen is where weight loss happens. But actually, Dr. Smith gave us one more thing to think about, and that's where our mind is.
Yeah. If you haven't fixed your relationship with food, it's very hard to make a different way of eating a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, if you're saying, okay, now is a good time for me to change the way I'm eating. Everything's looking good. I made it past the football I cared about. And so the season's over. I can go ahead and do what I want, you know, do what I want to do. If I didn't have a good relationship with food, then as soon as something came up, something terrible happened or something great happened, mm-hmm. I would end up reverting back to my old ways of eating, my old mm-hmm. ways of everything. So any change that you want to have in your life, any change, regardless, it's going to take you getting your head there first. And one of the things I like to share with that is this concept of a be, do, have.
Okay.
And so I'll talk to my clients about this all the time. But when I learned this, it's like this is a great little easy tool to think about. Okay, so if you want to have something, don't start with what you want to have. Start with what it's like to be that person.
Hmm.
Okay, so if I say I want to be a runner, mm-hmm. well, then I have to. I mean, when I have a running, I want to be able to go out and run. Then I want to just be like a runner. What do runners do? Well, they join a running club. They buy neat new sneakers. They get out and actually run, you know?
Right.
And then you do. And that's the point. It's like now you consider yourself a runner. And so now you do, you run. So the be, do, have is like just acting like you are that person, doing the things that they do and then doing it. And then you'll have what they have. So if you're excited about, you know, maybe you see a family member finish a 5K or a 10K or something longer, maybe even a marathon, and you're like, gee, I wish I could run a marathon. Mm-hmm. Well, what do marathoners do? I mean, how are they? They tend to be a little bit thinner, only because they don't want to carry a whole lot. I was 195 pounds. They called me a Clydesdale. I looked like a linebacker against everybody else that I was running with. But, you know, it was just... You just consider yourself a runner. So I was in running stores, buying running shoes and running shorts. And, you know, and then I was out on the weekends doing my long runs or in the gym doing my 4-hour marathon training workouts. And then I had it. I got out there and I ran my first marathon. That's and then awesome. Another one and then another one because I had become a marathoner until I ran the ultra. And I said, okay, I'm done. I'm going home. I'm tired.
What a powerful mindset. What a powerful change in perspective.
Yeah. So you got to get your head right first if you want a lifestyle change to stick. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to fall back on those bad habits because they're the crutches that are things that carry. And we talked about that with Abby Langer. You know, it's really important for you to get your head right. And then the thing we talked about with Dr. Smith that I thought was really important was, you know, kind of the new way of thinking about goals.
Yes. Okay. Yes, he mentioned the VERY SMART goals, and VERY was a new acronym I had not heard of either.
Well, he made it up, so
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's why I would know. Oh, okay, good. That's why I've never Clever. Heard this before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do you want to go over VERY with them again?
Yeah. So V stands for varied, as in having different types of metrics to monitor. E is for effective, R is for responsible, and Y is for yours. But varied, the V, is really what caught my attention.
Yeah. And I'll say this, you know, we talked, I guess it was a week or so ago, we talked about the different health measures. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the thing is if you're looking at your A1C, and you're looking at how fast you can walk a mile, and you're mm-hmm. looking at, you know, how many times per week you're able to exercise, and what you're keeping your kind of your macros or your calories at, depending on how you want to approach your nutrition, mm-hmm. Then those are different goals. And so one of them, you know, one thing's moving, you know, moving here and another thing's moving there. If you're tracking those different things, it's a little easier. But I wanted to circle back around because we didn't really talk about SMART in the podcast. And so some right. people might not have heard of SMART goals, mm-hmm. But a SMART goal is basically specific, meaning you want to do a specific thing. So it's something that's tangible. The next is measurable. So you have to be able to measure it or you don't know that you're doing it. It has to be attainable. So if you say, you know, if you set a goal saying, I want to be an NFL football player, well, I would say if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not going to be able to attain that goal. You mm-hmm. might want something a little bit more in line of what's possible to you. And then relevant, meaning, okay, it applies to you, you know, so something that would be relevant would be, you know, I want to eat better so I can improve my health and lose weight. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's relevant. And then timely. So timely would be how often, by when, those types of things. Now, a lot of people will set a goal and they'll say, I want to lose 30 pounds in the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it ticks all those general boxes. Mm-hmm. Is it specific? 30 pounds.
Sure.
It's measurable because you could step on the scale each day. Mm-hmm. It's attainable. I think mm-hmm. someone who really puts their mind to it could lose 30 pounds in 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's relevant to them because if the doctors told them, lower your weight so you can lower your A1C and maybe get off the high blood pressure medicine, all those different things.
Sure.
And then it's timely. So you've set your 6-month goal. The problem with that is that that's something you also don't have control over. So I'd love to be able to figure out another way to put another A in there. And that would be for action oriented. Oh. So instead of saying you want to lose 30 pounds, what are the actions that are necessary for you to be the person that weighs 30 pounds less? Mm-hmm. And you would think, okay, well, a person who weighs 30 pounds less is more active. Okay. So define that. Okay. I want to exercise 5 times per week or 6 times per week. Okay.
Perfect.
And you can be a little bit more specific to say, I want to lift weights twice a week. I want to do mobility work twice a week, and I want to do some cardiovascular work twice a week. And that's your goals. You know, did you do your cardiovascular work twice this week? Yes or mm-hmm. no? And it's within a week's time. So there you go. You know, that's what you're supposed to have done. You could even take it out to a month and say, okay, I want 9 strength training sessions per month. I want, you know, 9 cardio sessions per month. And I want 9 mobility sessions. Now, don't wait till the last week
to get it all in at once.
try to do 18 workouts in 7 no. days. No. So, you know, you want to be careful about that. And you do want it from a timeliness perspective to be something relatively soon. So not by 5 years from now, you know, I want to be 6 inches taller, you know, something that you can actually accomplish and something that's action oriented. So I know I need to work out, or I know that I need to eat healthier, and I'm going to define that in my terms of eating keto. Mm-hmm. Someone else might say, I need more vegetables. So I want to make sure that I have at least 2 to 3 servings of vegetables every day. Mm-hmm. And that's attainable. And then they're like, okay, that's pretty good. Now maybe I want to cut back on my starches and my pastas and my breads, and just to lower my calories. And I'm not going to measure calories, but I'm just going to say, I'm only going to have something white, which, you know, potato, starch, the pasta or a bread. I'm only going to have that twice a week.
Sure.
One serving twice a week. And so that cuts down significantly maybe on what you were eating. Mm-hmm. And now you're eating more vegetables. And if you listen to Abby Langer, you're putting more protein on your plate. Mm-hmm. And so now your whole macros and calorie set is very, very different than the way you're eating before, but it's attainable. You've taken those bridge gaps and you've said, okay, this is my goal. So mm-hmm. make it something you actually control, and you'll be much more effective. I guess maybe that would slide into his effective thing, but an effective goal, because you could do all of these things and your hormones are out of whack and you're like, I don't understand it. I'm eating 1200 calories a day. I'm drinking mm-hmm. 8 glasses of water and I'm walking 10,000 steps every day and the scale's not moving. You know, that's not in your control.
Right.
But the walking was in your control. The water was in your control. And, you know, eating more healthy, all those things were in your control. You were doing the right things. So just stick with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm starting my famine season. And so, you know, my first day of this, it's okay. How do I control this? Okay. Well, I've got to keep my carbs low. Mm-hmm. I've got to watch my electrolytes. And so, to go to the gym, I basically boiled 12 eggs. I got my tuna
Yum.
And my Himalayan sea salt.
Oh, there you go.
and so, you know, it's just what's in my control. Those are actions. Have the food I need, set myself up, and then just charge on.
I think that's great. Yeah. Being actionable and having the intention to be actionable is, you're right, something that should be added to our goal setting for sure. And maybe even working with a trainer, Alan, because you would have a lot of information in your podcast and there's a lot of articles out there, and some people may not really think about all these little details.
Yeah. You know, I would love to say that I was a provider of information outside of the podcast or whatever. And I do to an extent. You know, a client will ask me a question about a certain thing, and I'll give him or her my opinion on it. That happens all the time, but mm-hmm. there's not a lack of information out there. The internet is just chock full of stuff. Now it could get very confusing because there's all this contrast out there. If someone believes that and someone's doing that, it's like, you know, I go onto my Fitness Pal to check in on things, and it's still the same conversation. Just cut your calories. Just cut your calories. I'm like, okay, but they've done that. You know, they've done that and it's not working for them. So you can't just say, just cut your calories.
Right.
You know, it's almost a slap in the face for some people that have cut their calories to keep saying that when it's not working for them. So, you know, with my 12-week program, the things that we're really focused on first and foremost is mindset, you know, and then beyond that, it's just those kind of simple, subtle change things mm-hmm. that are in your control.
Yes.
And say, okay, wait, you can control this. So where do you want to set your, where do you want to set your line? Where do you want to start this, this journey? And then we put that in place. And so it's all custom to them. And then it's like, okay, how much movement can you do? What equipment do you have in your house? You know, Rachel here, you've got a great little home setup. I just opened up the gym. So I've got a nice little setup. Not everybody has that. Sometimes they have resistance bands. Sometimes they have the human body. Sometimes they're traveling. Sometimes they're home. Sometimes, you know, so we all have our own little circumstances. And so, you know, what I'm there to do is basically just help them first get the mindset and then get the lifestyle.
Yep. That sounds great. Just move that needle.
And you're doing similar stuff with your running. You know, you're saying, okay, if you're a runner and, you know, you want to stay healthy and, you know, you want to do your virtual 5K, 10K, or 50 miler in the upcoming months, you've got to train your running. That's for certain. And there's myriads of information out there about running. So you can find a program and you can follow a program. It's free on the internet. But you still got to get your mindset right. And you've got to get that balance. So you have a program that's to help runners maintain their strength. And that's going to help them stay healthy. Can you tell them a little bit more about that?
I have on my website, strong-souls.com, I have a runner's workout that you could download for free. It's body weight movements, so you don't need any equipment. It goes through all the different planes of motions. It hits all the main muscle groups that runners need to keep strong. And it's a great overall body short activity that you could do a couple of times a week, which is a great place to get started.
Yeah. So if you're a runner or you want to be a runner and you want to do it the right way, go check out Rachel's site. And if you're someone that wants to lose some fat, you know, and feel better and get a little bit more fit, you should message me or email me, Alan@40plusfitnesspodcast.com, and I'll give you some information. I'm going to be probably closing up the pre-launch on this pretty soon here because I'm getting close to my number of the cap number of people. I didn't want to run too many people through the pre-launch because I wanted to make sure I had all of it in place. And the results have been just off the charts. I'm like,
wonderful.
I'm so excited. At an average of just a little over 2 weeks, we've lost seven of us so far. Some people have lost 42 pounds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. So I've got some outliers. I've got some guys that are really doing well. And I've got some people that are, you know, they're pulling in behind, but everybody's losing weight. They're feeling good. And, you know, they're just pretty excited about it. You know, they're moving more, they're eating better. And it's just a really good, positive vibe in the group. So I'm really, really excited about what's going on here. And then again, I'll close it and then I'll do the actual kind of a launch thing sometime in March, either the first or the middle of March. But so if you're interested in this, don't delay. Go ahead and get on that. Email me and I'll get you in. So
excellent.
All right. So Rachel, anything else you want to talk about before we say goodbye?
Nope. That was a great interview, Alan. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye now.
Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we bring back Dr. Sarah Myhill and discuss her book, The Energy Equation, From the Naked Ape to the Knackered Ape. Until then, have a happy and healthy day.